It's hour number two of Midday with Trey and BK. We wrap it up at 12:45 with some reasons why Texas will beat Kansas by more than three touchdowns on Saturday. And shooting the bull at 12:30, this participation trophy culture reels its head in a youth football league. And in mere minutes, we're talking Texas Longhorns and a little bit of Cowboys with our buddy Justin Wells of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Elling. Brad Kellner is across from me. Adam Wagner is behind the glass. You can text us at 337-3776. That's the Specs text line. And give us a follow on Twitter at Brad Kellner, at Not the Fake Wags, at Courtesy Wave, and at Justin Wells 2424. That is the handle of our next guest. He is Justin Wells, managing editor at Inside Texas. Read his work at InsideTexas.com and hear him every week on this program, Wednesdays at noon. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How you doing?
Just another day in paradise, gentlemen.
Yes, it is. Finally starting to cool down across the state, and everyone has to appreciate that with just how hot it's been in 2019.
Hey, for a long-distance runner, this weather change is beautiful. I love it, this cool weather. It also reminds you it's football weather. You know, this is what you this is kind of what the fall means. And so I love this cool weather. I hope it stays.
No doubt about that. Justin, before we get into the Texas football conversation for the day, we did want to get your opinion on our Wednesday power rankings. This week's topic is our favorite musical decades. What are your top five musical decades from the past, I don't know, 50 or 60 years?
It's a great subject. I think number one, and I wonder how much of this is, you know, our age and things that when we grew up and things of that sort. But number one to me is the 80s. And it's not just because that's one of the decades I grew up in. It's because their music, I think, inspired so much stuff that you hear even today. You know, there was no techno until early 80s music. There wasn't a lot of punk until late 70s, early 80s. And then, of course, you know, it just 80s was the one hit wonder decade. And so, I, you know, probably because I'm a kid, but definitely the 80s would be number one. Number two would probably be the 70s. I love classic rock. I love soul and R&B. There was a ton of good stuff from both in the 70s. So the 70s would probably be number two. Number three would probably be the 2000s. They were pretty good. They brought back a little bit of rap. They brought back a little bit of harder rock. That you had. I like that a little bit better. My last one would probably be the 90s. I was pretty disappointed in the 90s. Early 90s, you know, really set the trend with rap and with grunge rock. But man, that was about all the 90s gave us. There was a lot of stuff like the Macarena. There was a lot of stuff that sounded like Hootie and the Blowfish. And so the 90s isn't one of my most favorites, but that would have to be my order.
Appreciate that. And now on to more pressing, more important questions. What in the world happened to the Texas offense on Saturday versus the Sooners? That was inexplicable versus what we've expected out of this group all year long.
I was a little surprised. And that's putting it mildly. It's taken me a few days to digest this game. Even after a rewatch, which accidentally killed my TV late Saturday night, we lost power.
I thought you took a baseball bat to the TV, because that's kind of what I wanted to do during my rewatch, Justin.
It was indicative of what I saw. And like our Ian Boyd, our X's and O's guru at Inside Texas, told me, he's like, this is much, much worse than I thought. I don't know what happened to the offense. I think they came in a little bit different than what they usually come in and run. They definitely did a lot more horizontal, trying to, utilize OU speed. That didn't work. I think OU was a lot faster on defense than anticipated. Kenneth Murray played an incredible game. And that first half, it just didn't seem like it was working. I don't know why it took so long for them to kind of get away from that, because in the second half, you saw them put up, I believe, 24 points, and they had three other possessions where that they could have scored. I don't know what happened to the offense, to be honest with you. I think that this week in practice is critical of getting everybody kind of on the same page, retuning the game plans to make sure that everybody gets kind of in their place. And it was just a bad outing altogether. Sam Ellinger would be the first person to tell you he didn't play his best game. The offensive line would have to own up to that with nine sacks. After Devin Duvernay, there just wasn't a whole lot more down the field that they could rely on. Without Rashawn Johnson, this may have been a blowout. And at the end of the day, we still have to remember Texas probably couldn't have played any worse, and the game plan was not as good as it could have been. And this was still only a 7-point loss to a top five team. And so if there's anything to glean from a silver lining, it's probably that.
Well, let's talk about the game plan, Jay Welsh, on the offensive side of the football. I mean, it was pretty funny. You know, Greg Davis, the offensive coordinator, responsible for a lot of the best years in Texas history, but also maybe the most hated offensive coordinator in the history of this football program. It's pretty funny and ironic that he was here last week around Texas football practice, because in the first half it kind of looked like a vintage Greg Davis offense. Why do you think Texas was so passive, and why do you think it took this Longhorns coaching staff such a long time to adjust and be more aggressive taking shots down the field?
That's the big question, Brad. It really is, because after into halftime, you started getting this eerie feeling. This felt like the early 2000s Texas OU games. Even though the score wasn't bad, you just felt like OU was always in control. And part of that was obviously, you know, utilizing their defense. OU's defense, Alex Grinch did a tremendous job against Texas on Saturday, and he deserves a lot of credit. At the same time, you know, Greg Davis has popped in and out for years with Coach Herman. You know, last week was no different. I know a lot of Texas fans have animosity towards him. I'm a big Greg Davis fan, to be honest with you, just because some of his offenses were the best in the history of Texas football. And those were also with the best quarterbacks. And I think Sam, being in his junior year, he's kind of in that upper echelon. He's kind of climbing towards that. And so, I understand coming in trying to do a little something different to try to throw off the defense. To do it for an entire half without adjusting, it's just confusing. It's one of those things where I don't think I've seen this coaching staff out-coached like I did on Saturday in the 3 years they've been in Austin. It was definitely something to see. And like I said, the frustration really, really lies not only with the coaches but with the players. They'll be the first ones to tell you that, you know, they didn't execute, they didn't put things together. I think it was, you know, when they say a team effort, I think the players weren't amped. I don't think they were, which I don't understand how you're not really up for OU, but it did seem like they were, you know, they came to breakfast a little late that morning. At the end of the day, though, I think this maybe needed to happen, because this is eerily similar to OU last year. When OU came into this game last year, they were beat. I mean, it was a 21-point game in the fourth quarter. And at the end of the game, all the questions Texas fans are asking about UT, OU fans were asking about OU. They were asking about Lincoln Riley and their decisions. And so this, in a strange way, might needed to happen. This needed to get guys on the same page a little bit more, to get kids, you know, they've bought in. There's a great culture there, but you really got to push it every single day. You can't pick and choose which weeks you're buying in and which weeks you aren't. Coach Herman said, you know, fixing the tackling is imperative. And so I think this maybe needed to happen for Texas to kind of get back to basics, to get back to some basic stuff, to actually show a base defense, to try to figure out what that might be, going into the seventh game of the season. At the end of the day, I think the offense takes a lot of the credit, a lot of the negativity to it, even though the defense didn't play well either. But this could help Texas get to the Big 12 championship, because they've gone through a major gauntlet this first part of the season. Now, the next half isn't going to be easy. You know, Baylor is tough. They're going to be tough at McLean. TCU will play incredible. They're going to be tough at Amon Carter. And so Iowa State and Ames, that's going to be tough. So I think there's going to be some games here where Texas can win, can get back to basics, can figure out what they're good at. And if they can get back to December, that would be the rematch. That would be the ultimate goal. And like I said, it's just like last year almost. And if Texas can get kind of on that streak, build off this loss, we may see these guys match up again in December just like last year.
Justin, what do you think this defense's identity should be?
That's another great question, Trey. I'm okay with the 3-3-5. I think that's good. For the most part, especially when you want to stop the run. there's not a lot. The big-time passers, you still have great offenses in the Big 12 this season, but you don't have the quarterbacks like you did last year. And so you can get away with having an extra linebacker on the field. I'm a proponent of – I like what TCU does with the 4-2-5. I think, you know, that extra DB on the field that's almost like a linebacker, I like that kind of look as well. Texas has played with that just a hair. But the key with their defense is if you're going to play with three down linemen, you have to set the edge. And if you can't set the edge, every team you play is going to go on the outside and go 8 yards a play, just like OU did. And again, give OU credit. Lincoln Riley tailored this offensive game plan to everything Jalen Hurts was great at. I don't think Jalen Hurts, it should be in the Heisman conversation anymore. And that's not taking anything away from the season he's had and what he did last Saturday against Texas. Honestly, I think he was a little exposed. I think we kind of saw who he really was. But at the same time, Lincoln Riley put him in every great position to succeed. And so on this defense, Coach Orlando has to match that. He's got to put these guys in positions to succeed. It's not imperative you have a base defense. It helps because it gives you your guys a sense of where they can go and less thinking, more reacting on the field. And so you don't have to have one. But at the end of the day, sit down with your players and ask guys which one of you are confused. Because when you show six different defenses in six different weeks, these aren't professional athletes. These are still kids, and they're trying to remember and calculate and get all these things in this game plan before that those Saturdays come up. With a base defense, I think you give them a sense of something solid, something they can rely on. And so maybe you don't have to, you know, you don't want Todd Orlando to get too away from the aggressive blitzes, from the exotic looks, because sometimes that does help. But if you don't have a base defense to rely back on and you can't set the edge against a team that's going to run to the outside 8 yards per clip, this is a whole other conversation.
Yeah, 6 weeks into the season and still doesn't really feel like there's an identity for this defense. Justin Wells of Inside Texas joining Midday with Trey and BK here on the Horn, talking Texas OU. Justin, back to the offensive side real quick. Tom Herman at his press conference on Monday is still not willing to name Roschon Johnson his number one running back. Is there something that I'm missing? Is it not clear and obvious at this point that Roschon Johnson, and he kind of got the bulk of the snaps as the game went on Saturday, but is there some sort of reason why Tom Herman's just not playing him the vast majority of the time and naming him the starting running back for this team?
This isn't really an issue because if you understand Tom Herman and his team, starters come and go. They come in and out. The depth chart is more important. Even though Keontae Ingram might start, Roschon Johnson gets more carries. I think that's been in back-to-back weeks, maybe. And so that's not a big deal. Roschon Johnson's, you know, being on the field for the first play is not as important as him being on the field for the last play. And so I think that the whole starting running back situation, I think that's a little blown out of proportion.
Yeah, but you don't want your best players on the field for the first drive. Like, you want to set the tone when your offense is on the field. You want your best 11 guys out there first, do you not? Like, I'm with you. Like, you obviously, it matters that Roschon's getting the carries late in the game, but why delay the inevitable?
It's one of those things where I think the game plan maybe sets up with Keontae early, and then Roschon comes in as a complimentary guy. And for the last 2 weeks, I think Johnson's proven to all of us that maybe he could be that lead guy. Maybe he needs to be the guy on the field for the first drive. I understand where you're coming from, but just understand, and it's the same thing with the DBs and the D linemen at Texas. I mean, on the defensive side, there's so much talent here, Brad, that the best players are on the field in the fourth quarter. The best players are putting themselves in a position to win. You know, Keontae Ingram starting is not a bad thing just because Roschon Johnson has had two back-to-back good games. And let's give him credit. I think he's had more than two. He's been a godsend for this offense. And I don't know what the score looks like if Roschon Johnson doesn't play big last Saturday. But at the end of the day, the depth chart is really, it doesn't matter. But the best players are going to be on the field in the second half and in the fourth quarter. And right now, if he feels like Keontae Ingram gives him the best chance in the first drive, and then you mix in Roschon Johnson a little bit later, so be it. And then in 2 weeks, we might be having another conversation when Jordan Whittington starts to work his way back. And so don't get caught up in who's starting. Just get caught up in who's finishing.
Justin, B.J. Foster seems to re-injure himself on an every-game basis at this point. And he also looks like he's laboring when he's out there. Do you think Texas should consider sitting him for maybe a game or two to try and get at least a little bit healthier versus the lesser competition that's coming up this weekend versus the Jayhawks? And considering that Chris Brown is now going to be out, for a few weeks, what do you think the secondary looks like in terms of who's starting versus Kansas on Saturday?
I think BJ is definitely playing with some lingering injuries, but if it was, it's one of those things where I think BJ, even at 80%, is probably a better player. It's probably one of your better players on defense. So you definitely want him out there. He needs a film session, and he needs to go through some things, some tackling, some things of that sort. I think he was labored, though, in some of those injuries. I'm with you that, you know, maybe he could take a game or two in the next month to try to heal up. But you could say that about a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. With Chris Brown essentially being out the next 6 weeks with a broken arm, it's going to be very, very. I think you'll see Brandon Jones play a little bit more over on the field side. Montrell Estell will definitely have to step up and play some more on that field. I think you'll see DeMarvion Overshown on the field more. He's finally getting to a point where he's a little bit healthier, and we saw him for one play against Texas OU, and he actually, I believe it was a safety blitz, and he got the sack or forced an incomplete pass. I can't remember. Regardless, Overshown looks like he's kind of working his way back in, so I think you could see him and BJ kind of helping each other in that position as well. The problem with BJ not playing that great is because it was in that nickel spot, and that's a spot that you can get exposed in. I mean, each time OU motioned somebody on offense, three defenders for Texas were confused. And so I think there wasn't just so much playing with a little bit more injuries and things of that sort. I think there was some confusion. And that goes back to not having a base defense. That goes back to trying 100 different looks instead of, you know, having two or three solid packages. And so BJ needs to get a little bit better. He'll be the first one to tell you that. He needs to get a little healthier. He'll be the first one to tell you that. But, you know, every team in college football has guys like that right now, guys that are dinged up, guys that are hurt, guys that are playing out of position. So they just need to get back to basics. I think Montrell Estell is going to do a tremendous job. He did good earlier in the year when Kincaid Stearns went out and when Chris Brown was playing some different spots he played. I like Brandon over in the boundary as well. Brandon can play some of the field. You can switch Estell over there. And then Overshown, I think you can move him around as well too. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where BJ plays these next few weeks, but I'm with you. I don't know if it's just the injuries need to heal a little bit. He just didn't have a good day on Saturday, and I don't know if that'll happen again.
Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, joining Midday with Trey and BK here on the Horn. Jay Wells, we've talked about it a little bit, but Tom Herman did say at his press conference on Monday that the issues with the defense and with the tackling are 100% fixable. It seems like there's been a tackling epidemic, to use Mac Brown's words, but there's been a tackling issue seemingly surrounding this program for a long time. But with this year in particular, do you think the tackling issues are fixable for the second half of the season?
Absolutely. And Herman, he had to dial back some of the tackling the last month. With the rash of injuries that have hit this team, you kind of do have to dial back the physicality because those fall camps are very physical. They're there to build you up, break you down, and get you ready for the season, to get you toughened up for week one and for the duration. And so I think you could see that a little bit. But, you know, tackling is a very basic fundamental. It's breaking down. Getting your back levels, getting everything, staying on the balls of your feet and driving through the ball carrier, keeping your head up. And you never, you know, want to lead with your head. I think there were a couple of DBs that were looking for kill shots instead of tackles. I think there were guys that were trying to make big hits instead of making basic tackles. And so it's not, I don't think it's just, you know, go back to practice and fix that issue because I do think it's fixable. It's reminding those guys, you don't have to knock his head off. You know, ask B.J. Foster. Each time he gets close to knocking the guy's head off, he gets, you know, flagged for targeting. You got to get guys down on the field. You know, Chris Brown, who's had a great year, was kind of exposed to that last Saturday. It seemed like each time he wanted a kill shot instead of getting the guy down. It's basic fundamentals, guys, and I know that Coach Herman and Coach Orlando are going to drill that to the guys. You can't leave your feet that fast on defense. When you're making tackles, you can't leave your feet like that. That's a basic fundamental, and yes, that is very fixable.
Texas was the home team this last Saturday, which means they were responsible for inviting recruits to the big game. Any updates in the world of recruiting with the Longhorns in the middle of the season?
That's the beauty of Texas OU is, you know, with Texas hosting, they can always bring in a bunch of guys. You know, in the past, when there have been some blowouts, especially like we had talked about earlier in the early 2000s, it could have shifted a few recruitments. Adrian Peterson and Rhett Bomar come to mind. But this last weekend, you know, kids, it wasn't the best game for Texas. It was one of the ugliest 7-point losses I've ever seen. But at the same time, it was a one-possession game with 2.5 minutes left, and Texas had plenty of chance to win. Recruits see that. I talked to a handful of guys that were there. They love the atmosphere. They love the intensity. They love the chance of Texas fight back and forth. A lot of those guys got caught up in it, and they really enjoyed it. I don't think that game is going to be a big measuring stick when it comes to recruits, at least not from 2020 class. 2021, 2022, that remains to be seen. Right now, the only recruiting updates is that the class of 2020, like I said, is almost done. There's really not a whole lot of spots left in there. This weekend there's going to be a couple guys that could be in this class. You're looking at Bastrop Cedar Creek's Alfred Collins is going to take his official this weekend. Also is Loic Fungi, the wide receiver out of Midland Lee. He's going to take his official to Texas this weekend. The Horns are in great position with those two right now. It'll be interesting to see how they how they do this weekend. But in the past, you know, a blowout to Texas OU might hurt you a little bit, like we said with Adrian Peterson, but that didn't happen this time. That hasn't happened in a while, believe it or not, not since the early 2000s. I believe 2012 was the last one. And so the recruits came away. They loved it. You know, they see Texas as a 7-point loss. They don't see it as what a lot of fans saw it as, you know, kind of getting out physical, out coached, things like that. They don't see it that way. I think the recruits had a good time overall, and it'll be this weekend coming up will be interesting to see how they kind of solidify some of their final top targets in the 2020 class.
All right, Justin, we're going to save you the Dallas Cowboys talk for at least one more week. Hopefully they can find a W versus the Eagles this Sunday night.
It's too depressing right now, man.
In the meantime, he is Justin Wells. Make sure to read his work at InsideTexas.com. Follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and check him out on this program every Wednesday at noon. Justin, thank you as always for the time. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Jay Welsh.
This football weekend was so bad, I almost called Wags to hold me.
Yeah, not a great weekend if you rooted for the Longhorns or the Cowboys. All right, Jay Wells, good stuff, man. There he goes, Justin Wells of Inside Texas. Yeah, very disappointing if you're a Horns and Boys fan. At least the Texans saved the day for football fans in the state of Texas.
Sure.
Yeah, if you are a fan of that football team. All right, it's Midday with Trey and BK. Good stuff there from Justin Wells. We will get to Tinder Time with our man Wags. We'll hit some of the other sports headlines from around the world. Plus, Shooting the Bull today. Trey, you've got today's tease.
Yes, the participation trophy culture has reared its head in a youth football league in Philadelphia.
Oh, youth football. Oh, in Philly. Oh, can you imagine the parents in that one? Wow, looking forward to that. That's next.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Coming up in just a minute, it is Tinder Time, followed by Shooting the Bull. Did want to let you know one more time that Rod Babers is broadcasting live at 7-Eleven at 614 East Koenig Lane today from 1 until 5. Of course, the broadcast is happening there 1 to 3. He'll be hanging out from 3 until 5, saying hello and helping you sample out some of the best tailgating vendors around. That includes Recover 180, Tivana, and Highball Energy. Plus, register for your chance to win a pair of VIP Tail Garden passes on 17th and San Jacinto. That's in Shoals Beer Garden. Details on the events calendar at hornfm.com. Rod Babers live from 7-Eleven at East Koenig Lane and Burnett Road today from 1 until 5.
The game of the year in college football coming up on Saturday. Prime time.
Okay.
It'll be seen by everyone across the country who has the Longhorn Network. Texas and Kansas, baby. And in about 15 minutes, I'll tell you why the Jayhawks have no chance. Not only to win this football game, but to cover the 21-point line. By the way, the line opened up at about 23.5.
It's gone down.
Which means the money's coming in on the Jayhawks. The line has gone down. As a guy who's watched every Kansas in every Texas football game this year, I will tell you why 21 points is not nearly enough for you and your cousins. We'll do that in about 12 to 15 minutes or so. But we do have a couple of bits to get to here in this 12:30 segment on Midday with Trey and BK. Let's toss it to our man Wags. It is Tinder time.
Bonds up.
Tinder time in Texas, brought to you by Altstadt Brewery, Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here, the best beer that you can find in Central Texas. Pick you up a six-pack on your way home from work today. Altstadt Beer, no impurities, no regrets.
Wags, what is your headline for today, sir?
A match made in heaven.
Okay, I'm swiping right to that one.
Yeah, swipe right. It's a good tease.
Joe Maddon agrees to be the new manager of the Los Angeles Angels. Not really heaven, but, I mean, it's got a little pun there with
angelic.
The Angels. And, yeah, there you go, a little angelic undertone. He's agreed to $12 million, up to $15 million in that range for about 3 years. Again, the sources and details haven't been, you know, out there secured or confirmed yet. It's not confirmed yet, but I mean, they're expecting to announce it in a press conference next week with all the meats and potatoes and the details later to be disseminated.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Maddon's
confirmed now.
An upgrade over Brad Ausmus for sure.
Just a bit.
As a Rangers fan, I kind of miss seeing Mike Socha in the dugout because I always knew the Angels were never going to do anything. At least in the last decade of that guy's tenure.
The most miserable guy in the history of the sport.
Socha face is a thing. It's like Manning face with Eli Manning. Socha face was the baseball equivalent for that for a number of years. Now, pretty cool for Joe Maddon. He was probably the most sought-after managerial candidate in Major League Baseball, so it's a good get for the Halos. We'll see if he can actually lead Mike Trout to a playoff win, which he has none of those so far in his pretty illustrious career. And also, Joe Maddon's dad played for the Angels back in the day, so you got a pretty cool full circle story right there. So, big get for the Angels. You figure Joe Maddon was not going to be out of work for very long. That should make the Halos a little bit better than what they have been.
He lost the Cubs locker room, but he is a fantastic manager and a guy who has proven the ability to get it done at a couple different stops now. The fact that he is going back home, in a sense, to coach the Angels is a big deal, and you would guess that they're going to be better off with him versus Brad Ausmus.
Only got 1 year, right?
Yeah.
The former Astro great, Brad Ausmus. Yeah, Joe Maddon, I mean, anyone who can take the Rays with their payroll to a World Series berth. I know he didn't win it there. He won it in Chicago, though, a couple of years ago. They kind of won it in spite of Joe Maddon, some folks would argue. I think that guy's a pretty good manager, though. So, good get for the Halos, and yes, some more baseball news. And oh, by the way, if you missed it, we let off the show with this, but you Astros fans out there, Game 4 of the American League Championship Series has been postponed. It was scheduled to be tonight. They're expecting inclement weather in New York this evening, so it has been moved till tomorrow, which means there will be no travel day in this series. They will play 4 games in a row, if necessary, from tomorrow all the way until Sunday.
And Game 5 in the NLCS also not happening tonight because
inclement
the Mets
weather
swept the Cardinals yesterday.
Yes, good job. Congrats to Bryce Harper. He has earned a lot of adversity he faced for a number of years in D.C., and he finally leads his team to the promised land. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't. All right, good stuff, Wags. There is Tinder Time brought to you by Altstadt Beer. It is Midday with Trey and BK. We transition from bit to bit, as we do so well on this program. It is now time to shoot the bull.
Shooting the bull.
Shooting the Bull, sponsored by Audiovisual Consultations.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 255-8678, the phone number to call when you want the home TV setup of your dreams. And if you're looking for something fun to do for the next couple of months here in Central Texas, get out to the HEB Center at Cedar Park and watch the Texas Stars battle it out against the top teams in the AHL. And our man Tom McKay helped create the Texas Stars Foundation, which has benefited numerous Central Texas charities over the last few years, raised more than $1 million for Central Texas nonprofits across our fair burg. Tom McKay, Audiovisual Consultations, also Texas Stars and the Texas Stars Foundation. Get out and see them all season long, Trey.
Get those tickets at TexasStars.com. Guys, youth football is an interesting case study in what's going on in America right now. Try to teach young people life lessons through our favorite sport under the watch of some very responsible adults with the kids' best interests in mind, with many other adults around the practices and games who are better defined as egomaniacal lunatics. At the same time, you
what,
football...
all Philadelphians?
Well, yes, all Philadelphians can be described as egomaniacal lunatics. At the same time, youth football is under the same head injury microscope as the rest of the sport, also having to cater to the participation trophy culture that has become far too common in 2019. And it's the participation trophy bit that's our focus on this next story. We go to the aforementioned Philadelphia, where a youth football coach faces a suspension and fine after his team of 7 and under kids blew out their opponent last Saturday, which is a violation of league rules.
Define blew out their opponent.
Any guesses on the final score before I give you the info?
28-0.
Ooh.
And they're calling that a 4-score game.
Yeah, you would think blowout would be something ridiculous.
Like 52.
Like some of these stories that make national news when like a basketball team beats a team for the blind and deaf like 100-0. Like generally you would need a score like that to make national news, but 2019 ain't generally, sir. Times have changed. So I'm going to go with 35. I'm going to give the other team a touchdown. I'm going to say 35-6. Is where we're at with this blowout where the coach had to apologize.
The opposing team thanks you for that touchdown that was never scored.
Ah, dang it.
The final, you were close on the first score, 36-0. League rules say that you cannot beat an opponent by more than 30 points.
League rules, it's mandated.
So what are you supposed to do if the other team sucks so bad?
Work on special teams.
Great question. As a matter of fact, Kyle Williams, who is the coach, in trouble here. He says his team was up by 30 with 2 minutes left, which is right there on the borderline of not being in trouble.
Yep.
He actually called timeout to replace his starting offensive players with all second stringers.
Well, they probably should have done that before then.
That's fair. But his second string running back, who was apparently a 5-year-old, broke free and started running towards the end zone. He was running down the sideline, screaming for this kid to go down.
Hell no! 5-year-old's not going down.
He sees pay dirt. He's scoring the touchdown
there. Fourth-string running back who's, what, 3 years younger than everybody else?
Exactly.
That guy's hitting 6, man.
Yes, I have no problem.
This is one opportunity for the end zone.
This
he's going to take it.
No problem with the 5-year-old going for pay dirt there. But
at
now,
least they
Williams,
missed the extra point.
I guess so.
Some solidarity there.
They really suck at kicking in youth football.
They probably can't get it there. He's 5.
Yeah, they probably went for 2 and took a knee or something like that, like the Dolphins should have done against the Redskins.
In my league, in Pop Warner, you used to get 2 points if you converted the field goal for the extra point until you were a certain age. So.
Yeah, and just a point if you do the 2-point conversion bit, that's funny.
You should probably be getting 7 points. I think it's tougher for those kids to kick an extra point through the uprights than it is for them to get the ball into the end zone, no? So 36-0 was the final.
So 36-0 is the final, and now because of this, the league is considering penalizing Coach Williams by suspending him for 2 games and fining him $500.
Fining him?
Fining him $500.
A youth football
coach? I don't even know
how
that's legal.
I don't think that is legal.
I don't know.
He doesn't get paid by the league.
He's probably volunteer too, right? He probably coaches volunteer.
Isn't all youth coaching, unless it's a select league or something like that, which I don't know if they have that for 6-year-old football.
Hopefully not.
What's the average age of the kids in this? In
this
league,
older than 7.
Okay.
So it's probably 5-7,
I would
guess.
There's no way this guy is getting paid. They're going to fine him for his day job?
This story is ridiculous. And we have to thank former Philadelphia Eagle wide receiver Torrey Smith.
Vince Papale. I thought he was the only one who could save the day here.
Torrey Smith, who is the brother-in-law of Williams. He actually took to Twitter criticizing the punishment, calling it another example of building weak children. And coaches in other leagues around Philadelphia said, look, we understand why people are upset, but rules are in place to prevent injury and embarrassment
there
for the losing team.
It's not injury there, it's embarrassment.
Right.
Don't even play that card. So why didn't, after the team went up 36-0, you said with about 2 minutes left,
lay down.
Why didn't they just let the other team score?
Tried to do what Detroit attempted versus Green Bay on Monday night, where they actually tried to let Jamal Williams score that touchdown.
Exactly.
Yeah, they should have.
Why wouldn't you do something like that? You know, in a spring football game, you've got like an 85-year-old who's about to die. You get him on the field and everyone just runs away from him. Why don't you do that to let the other team score the touchdown? So you don't get fined.
I don't know. It's a fair question, especially once you've already gone over that point.
In Philadelphia, I figure that type of behavior would be encouraged in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
What, do they put Crisco on all the street lamps to celebrate the 36-0 win? because they were worried about people climbing up the poles?
That's a great point. If participation trophy culture has reached Philadelphia, it's over.
Yeah, like that was our saving grace.
This whole country is covered. Next thing, they're not going to be booing Santa Claus when he goes out to Eagles games.
I cannot
December 25th.
Believe they're going to find a volunteer youth sports coach $500.
Suspend him for two games.
That is groundbreaking. That is Roe v. Wade. That is Brown versus the Board of Education.
Roe v. Wade.
Now we've got youth football coach versus the city of Philadelphia.
Plessy v. Ferguson.
This is huge, man.
Maryland versus McLaughlin.
This is going in the history books. Wow. Well, they're shooting the bull. Nice find there. A youth football coach might get fined for blowing out a team 36-0 in youth football. How about that? It's Midday with Trey and BK with you on a Wednesday. We've got one segment to go. Our wrap-up segment today, I'm going to tell you why Kansas has no chance. I just want to just wait till basketball season to play the Texas Longhorns. This game on Saturday is not going to be close. Call your cousins. 21 points ain't enough. That's next.
Final segment of today's midday program means it's time to wrap it up, and it's sponsored by Paul's Motorworks.
Never a bad time to wrap it up, my friend. But this segment is brought to you by Paul's Motorworks. And there's never a bad time to go to Paul's Motorworks when you need to get your car taken care of, whether it's regularly scheduled maintenance like an oil change or a tire rotation, or if you have a serious problem with your vehicle, take it to Paul, see if they can help you out. We've got expert diagnostic skills that could save you time and money versus going to the dealership. They won't try to upcharge you like a whole bunch of other maintenance shops would try to do. Paul's Motorworks, 620 and 2222. Tell them I sent you and get 10% off your order.
All right, BK, I'm curious to hear about this because Longhorn fans, well, we're feeling pretty low right now after what happened in Dallas last weekend.
Yes, we are.
Here come the Jayhawks to the rescue, traveling to Austin for the game on Saturday.
Bill Self and company.
Vegas doesn't have much faith in Kansas winning this one outright. They don't even have much faith in the Jayhawks keeping it close. The line is right around 3 touchdowns right now, but you say that's not enough.
Now, Kansas is
like
not very good.
Deviate from that.
Sorry, Coach. Could you speak any faster? Please. That's 5 words in about 5 seconds. That is a horrible ratio right there. Look, Kansas is just not very good. They are 2-4, 0-3 in the Big 12, and they are coming off of a bye week, but they also have a new offensive coordinator in place. So they're going to be implementing an entirely new offense from a guy who was coaching at the NAIA level last year. Not great. Kansas, let me start with Texas. Let's just get away from Kansas for a second. Since 2000, and you think about where this football program has been since 2000, right? The aughts, maybe the second best decade in the history of this football program, sans 1960s. Mm-hmm. And the 10s, maybe the worst decade of this football program's history. The game after OU, since 2000, the Longhorns are 17-2.
Wow.
And most of those games are blowouts. The only two losses came in 2011 and 2017. Both of those were to Oklahoma State. It's obviously not the Longhorns' opponent this weekend. But to Kansas, Kansas ranks, this is in the Big 12, so 10 teams in the Big 12, 10th in scoring offense, 9th in total offense, 9th in passing offense, 8th in rushing offense. They are 9th in scoring defense and total defense. They are 10th in rushing defense. They are 10th in third down defense. Whoa. By the way, Texas still first in the country in third down offense. And they are 108th in the country in turnover margin. Last year, the only reason why Texas was and I'm saying even though they were 3-9 last year, they were number 2 in the country in turnover margin per game. Mm-hmm. You knew that was not sustainable. This year, they are 108th in college football in turnover margin. They don't really do anything well. And I think Texas is going to be super amped, super motivated to get this victory and to do it emphatically after what happened in Dallas this past weekend. I think Texas is going to take it to the Jayhawks early, and Kansas just doesn't have enough to keep this game close.
Now, the assumption for someone like me who really hasn't watched much in the way of the Jayhawks this year is that if nothing else, They have a decent ground attack with Puka Williams, but the numbers suggest that that's actually not the case this year. He has not gotten it going like he did last year.
Yeah, and I think a big strength of this Kansas football team is no longer with the team. And this is a story that didn't make national news. This didn't even make conference news because it's Kansas. But KU's rushing attack to start the year, and even last year when Puka Williams was getting all the headlines he was getting, it was a two-headed monster with him and a guy named Khalil Herbert. Mm. Khalil Herbert is a senior for Kansas, but after game four, he kind of did what DeArick King did at Houston and decided to redshirt the rest of the year. And the initial thought was he was going to come back to Kansas for next season, but now the thought is he's going to transfer and leave the program altogether. Khalil Herbert, in the first four games for Kansas, now against some weak competition, there's no doubt about that, but he was averaging 9 yards per carry. And he was a big weapon out of the backfield as well. He's a senior. He was a weapon, and he was taking some of the pressure off of Puka Williams. Like, if you would see Puka in the game, you're like, oh, Kansas is probably going to run. Sometimes if you were a defense, you saw Khalil Herbert in, you wouldn't be so focused on stopping the run. But Herbert was a stud, but he is not a part of this offense anymore. So Texas is a significantly better football team, and this team's going to be extra juiced after what happened in Dallas. I don't think this game is going to be too close at DKR Saturday night.
Are the Jayhawks worse on offense or defense?
Well,
pick your poison.
You know what? They're ninth in scoring defense and 10th in scoring offense, so I guess we'll say scoring offense. I am curious what this offensive coordinator is going to bring to the table. Brent Dearman is his name, but to ask KU to learn an entirely new offense over 2 weeks' time just after one bye week, I think that is relatively unrealistic to expect. They're not good. Take Texas and the points. And watch the game on Longhorn Network, but more importantly, listen to the game right here on the Horn pregame show starting at 2 on Saturday.
Hey, thank you to you for toughing it out today. I know you're feeling a little bit under the weather. You did a great job.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. We are children of the corn here on this program over the last couple of weeks with all the sickness we're dealing with. All right, the Rodcast is coming up next from 1 to 3. Chad and Kevin from 3 to 7. Thanks to Justin Wells for joining us today. Thanks to all of you for texting and listening throughout the program. For the fantasy sports guru, the Marine, Adam Wagner across the glass, thank you for your service to this country and this show. For the Sultan of Cynicism, the Vomit King, the male Amy Schumer, Trey Elling across the table, I am BK, and we will be back to get a pop at the same time tomorrow. Until then, the bygones be bygones. You can go and get the hell on. You and your mama. We out of here.